Welcome back, everybody, to Structured Insights, a podcast from the team at Structured. We go beyond buzzwords today to talk about real stories and strategies in the cybersecurity space, infrastructure, and intelligent automation. Today, we are excited because we get to talk really about cyber resilience. And specifically, we're going to be digging into a great partner of ours, which is Rubrik. And trying to dig into what does data protection, cyber resilience, what does that really mean in the real world? So welcome back, Bill, to the discussion.
Hey, everybody. Looking forward to talking about demystifying the first buzzword we already used in cyber resilience.
So this conversation, it's not about backup per se. It's about trying to get rid of post-traumatic IT stress, I think is how I'm going to look at it today. So it's that we don't want companies to be in survival mode. So let's jump right into it. Maybe let's define again. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about backup. We've talked about cyber resilience in previous episodes. But how do we really even think about backup, like backing up your data from an infrastructure perspective?
Sure. I think, you know, it's important to note that backup and data protection is one of the most critical points of cyber resilience. But cyber resilience really speaks at its core to how do I ensure that my business operations are online and available as close to, you know, five nines, 100% as I can get.
And I think, I mean, it's probably also good to point out that those five nines, I mean, if you have a plan, you have to make sure you test the plan, right?
That's a backup and disaster recovery 101, which is often a piece of the plan that gets forgotten about or gets left behind, right? When everything's running, we kind of trust the system. And, you know, we don't think about our internet at home until it goes out. And now, can I control my thermostat? Do my light switches work? You know, all those sorts of things. So when it comes to a business enterprise, it's even more critical. And I think as we look back 10, 15 years, testing DR plans was difficult. And I think as we look from the last 5 years and forward into the future, kind of DR and business continuity testing has gotten much easier. And a lot of that is thanks to kind of the advent of cloud and cloud infrastructure and these modern backup and data protection tools like Rubrik that allow us to test to those DR plans in a much more efficient, scalable, and consumable way. And now maybe I'm doing two DR tests a year where many organizations had, you know, invested, you know, lots of commas of dollars into multiple data centers, but it was still difficult to actually test the fault tolerance and resilience of that enterprise.
Do you have any good, we thought we had it backed up stories?
Well, I think we want to protect the innocent or the guilty here.
Guilty.
But along that line, I do think that when we think about backup and data protection, you know, true immutability of that storage is a really, really important topic, because one area that we have seen is maybe organizations that thought those backups were secure, protected, and or air gapped, and maybe weren't. And so when a ransomware environment had maybe hit and propagated, the backup data was also infected. So when we talk about immutability and air gapping, it's that when I'm doing those daily, weekly, monthly type incremental backups, that those backups are not able to be touched by any application, malware, foreign adversary, so that even if I'm in the worst case scenario that malware had been propagating my environment for a week, a month in some cases before it was found, hopefully we're helping you detect that quicker. But in those cases where that happens, you need to be able to go back to a known, good, true backup that was not able to be touched by any bad actor or application to recover to a known good state. And it's really important when you're evaluating your backup and data protection strategies that you're really digging into the immutability, how that's accomplished, and where those backups are being stored.
Are there certain industries or verticals that are more susceptible to backup like recovery issues than others?
It's a tough question, but I would say that, you know, backup and data recovery really falls into two categories. There's recovery from a malicious event, and there is recovery from a, you know, natural disaster, you know, outage, et cetera. So it really starts with, in both cases, it starts with understanding what your application profile looks like, where your applications live. Are they on-prem? Are they running in cloud infrastructure, or are they running as hosted SaaS applications? I think one maybe misnomer, as often people assume that SaaS applications are safe and secure because that vendor has built in redundancy protection, et cetera. And that it's nobody's fault for that misnomer, because those applications are up 99.999% of the time. However, if you dig into like the terms and conditions, there is no guarantee of your data sovereignty, your data availability. So backing up SaaS applications, even major ones, if you're, whether we're talking about Microsoft 365, Salesforce, or other mission critical applications, just because they're a SaaS app and they're available all the time, they should still be backed up. And now when we dive into talking about more the my on-prem systems or my applications living in the cloud, again, that's where I really have to make sure that my backup and disaster recovery plan is solid, and I'm ready to recover from either one of those occurrences I talked about, whether it's a bad actor breach type event or natural disaster. And part of like BC and DR planning is around assessing what are those risks based on where my data center lives, right? If my data center is in Florida, I have very different natural risks than I do if my data center is in Nevada, right? But can my business support, you know, is one location better for my business? All those factors get weighted into that kind of BCDR cyber resilience planning matrix on where you're deciding to put your data and then what your recovery plan and your recovery objectives look like.
So we've talked about, obviously there's different technologies to do this, different companies. I mean, how does Rubrik's approach as an example differ from other traditional backup solutions?
Yeah, I think, you know, Rubrik's been a really interesting technology in our portfolio. You know, they're kind of what I would call part of the modern gen of backup, you know, hardware and software solutions. And there's also lots of other good solutions out there that are similar. But when we think of Rubrik, we really think of a security first mindset. And we think that's what's separated Rubrik from many of its competitors. The way that they handle immutability and air gapping. But I think also more interestingly is the approach that they've taken to leveraging the backup data that you have in storage and putting security tools, services, and detections on top of that. In a normal backup scenario, when I think back to the days of tape libraries and tape archives, I back that up on whatever my frequency is. It goes into a tape, then I keep 30 days on site. Then I send them out to, you know, Iron Mountain or some other cold storage facility. And, you know, I'm investing and spending money on that data that's sitting there very cold. Rubrik has developed a number of kind of security, governance, and visibility tools that sit on top of that data lake that I now have access to that's sitting in my backup archive to provide me additional insights, analytics, et cetera, into that data. So it really speaks to that transformation from backup and DR into cyber resilience. Rubrik is really helping lead that charge because they're taking a security first mindset and figuring out how to get more value out of that data that you're spending time, effort, and money on backing up.
Some of the comments I've heard, you know, when you dig into some of the research around this topic is that it's moving away from just getting files back. It's more now become, you know, this new metric of time to clarity, right? And what are you going to restore? When? Why? Like, I mean, it's changing that, I don't want to say old school in a bad way, but I mean, when you're talking about tapes and like this, it is older school than this new methodology. So, I mean, is this new time to clarity? How important is that now?
I think it's a really interesting point because I think with these modern solutions, you can achieve both. You know, was I going to go, did it make sense for the organization to go pull that tape out of storage to get a file? Maybe. Sometimes it did. Sometimes it didn't. So I can now rapidly do a file level recovery of a certain you know, file living within an email somewhere from the archives from a year ago, all the way up to respinning up my ERP in the cloud in, you know, potentially, you know, minutes, and have that time to clarity, so that if my data center goes offline, I can have my ERP and critical systems back up and running in the cloud because I had that data there and available, and I can hit the button to restore and have operations running. And I think that's the, you know, cloud has transformed a lot of things about how organizations approach their business, whether it's just from their day-to-day serving up applications and how their users connect and are secured. But I think the kind of cyber resilience and the disaster recovery strategy is one of the biggest values that the cloud brings, because of that time to recovery and time to scale of recovery. I no longer have to have a one-to-one environment sitting there idle in my secondary data center when I can just restore on demand to the cloud what I need to restore to at least keep my bare minimum of operations running while I assess what the outage or the breach or the disaster was, and then decide whether to spin up more services as time goes on, as we work through, you know, recovery from that incident.
It's interesting when we think about, you know, everything you've just mentioned, I feel like is somewhat behind the scenes. Is cyber resilience is there? I mean, there's a lot of technical behind the scenes, but how should businesses and enterprise look at it from a customer facing view to their customers? Is that something they should be cognizant of?
I think absolutely. It's critically important, and that's back to the conversation we had earlier about kind of just assessing the business risk. You know, it's one thing if maybe some of my internal users are offline and can't get to an application. Maybe I have an alternate resource. If I'm at a doctor's office and I can't get access to the EHR, I go pull out, you know, script paper and carbon copy sheets, and I could write notes and do those things, and get that data back into maybe the EHR at some point. You know, probably a worst case example, but, you know, it's doable. If my presence to my clients goes offline, the brand reputation, the customer confidence loss, I mean, it's really hard to put a dollar on that. I mean, there could be hard dollars lost in revenue, transactions, et cetera. But I think that the potential brand reputation hit and kind of soft costs are really innumerable. You know, if you're in a B2C type enterprise and your website goes down for 2 hours even, or you can't serve clients, or they can't get online and pay their bill, or they can't get access to the tools and services they're used to, there's usually somebody waiting in the wings to take that customer away from you. And so I think anytime you've got a significant kind of customer facing presence, you know, web facing presence to the world, because as you know, those Most websites have a tremendous amount of backend infrastructure that's behind the scenes that actually makes that work. They're connected to tens and hundreds of systems in some cases that actually allow that, you know, very simple web page work. It's really a mix, a suite of applications that are helping it function. And so I think those are the folks, when you think about cyber resilience, these are the conversations that are happening at board levels, is the concern over that brand. That brand reputation hit that happens in the event of an outage.
It's almost, I mean, if I to maybe restate your point, is that I think historically, when we think of backup and cyber resilience, I always thought of it as I'm recovering it like I'm trying to recover my business. But your point is you're almost recovering it like a brand. Like it's mm-hmm. your, if you screw up the brand, you've not only, you have the downward effect is not just your customer data, it's your reputation, it's your future business, it's your current business. Like it's become exponentially more important, right?
Absolutely.
So let's think about a little bit around the flip side of this, is the attacker view. I mean, when you think about the technologies, whether it be Rubrik or anybody else, what are the people that are the bad actors that are trying to get in? What are they worried about? I mean, what are they worried about with backup now as that technology has gotten better?
I think that, you know, I think it's causing a shift to needing to get quick wins and easy hits is big, because when I think back maybe 5-7 years ago, before immutability was even as big of a conversation in backup as was now. The first thing that once an attacker came in and let's say successfully encrypted files in your environment, while that was happening, the first thing they were doing was going and looking for your backup appliances and your backup targets to also encrypt and infect those files. Because, you know, before that, it was like, great, these files weren't encrypted. I just go back to last week's backup, restore. Okay, maybe I lost a week, a day, something of data, but we can survive that. So they got smart and they started attacking those backup repositories as part of their breach. So investing in the right backup and data protection solutions is more critical than ever to ensure I've got that immutability and air gapping of that environment, and that so that if there is a successful breach, I'm minimizing the blast radius of that. And like I said, in return, I think it means that we're seeing hackers kind of maybe time to notify, like in a ransom event, they're bringing that window down. They know organizations might have the capability to recover. And so maybe they're looking for a quick win. Maybe they're asking for a smaller dollar amount to try to hopefully just make it go away. But, you know, what was, you know, previously they'd post on the dark web and they'd say, we're going to release this in, you know, 7 days. Now they're threatening to release in 24 hours or whatever. So that again, even if your business is completely unaffected by it, I've still got a brand and reputation hit problem if that news comes out that they successfully breached your enterprise.
So how does to that point, like how does cyber insurance play into all this?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure most of our clients and organizations have seen the stresses of cyber insurance, right? And costs and premiums are going up significantly due to the cost of these breaches, right? The insurance companies are for-profit organizations and they need to make that money back when they have to, when they have to pay out a claim. The level of insurability, the bar for insurability keeps getting higher and higher. And then for many of our clients who are maybe third-party contractors to other organizations, to whether it be to governments, to a large enterprise, whatever it is, those organizations that are their customers are requiring higher and higher cyber insurance premiums as part of that agreement. So now I've got to buy more cyber insurance that's more expensive than ever to meet my customers' demands, our customers' customers' demands. And so, you know, cyber insurance is a series of requirements, checkboxes, policies, et cetera, that you have in place to kind of provide your evidence of insurability to that organization. And I think that what we see time and time again is our clients who, you know, there's doing things like putting in two-factor authentication, a lot of the basic checkboxes that kind of get you through the checklist. Well, A, those checklists are no longer half a page. They're four pages of things. And so by having a strong cyber resilience posture strategy, that's demonstrating to the insurance carriers and brokers a higher degree of confidence and insurability to hopefully reduce premiums or increase the amount of cyber insurance you can get. And I think the two biggest areas that we see our clients going after to kind of provide that confidence back to the insurance industry is having a very comprehensive managed detection and response, managed endpoint security, managed SOC solutions in place. And then the second being a really strong backup data protection and recovery strategy. So I think those things all come together, you know, under that cyber resilience umbrella, because one is making sure I'm being proactive in how I'm not only protecting my enterprise from breach, but how quickly I can respond to breach. And then, of course, how quickly I can and confidently recover my data and continue my operations with a minimal blast radius in the case of, for example, the Rubrik example I told earlier. So kind of by adopting these tool sets in our customers' environments, they can, you know, not only go back to their insurance brokers and carriers, but also their board and their executive team with very, you know, demonstrated posture and recovery goals and protection goals that they can advertise not only to the board, but to those insurance carriers.
So it's a good way of saying it's analogous to, you have a car and you have the car has about 1,000 airbags in it with a whole bunch of cameras and seatbelts and everything, that the more you have, obviously it supports your cost ratio with cyber insurance and risk, everything else.
Yep, absolutely.
I have to ask, because of course we've talked about this another, and it's on everybody's, it's the acronym of everybody talks about AI. So how does Rubrik, how does other technologies use AI to look at potential vulnerabilities before they're exploited in situations like this?
Absolutely. I think when, you know, speaking to kind of the AI enabled tools piece of the AI conversation, and we've talked about this a little bit before in some previous pods, but a lot of those additional security features that I've talked about that Rubrik's brought to market are kind of being enhanced and powered by AI and ML. Hmm. So it's important. It's not your team or your security analyst having to just comb through reports and data of, for example, that Rubrik data lake that's out there. It's the AI and machine learning tools that they have developed and built to go do that work for you. And that's what you're really investing in when you're investing in that suite of tools and services to go proactively spider through and mine your data and look for indicators of compromise, look for risk, look for sensitive data that may be stored somewhere where it shouldn't be, especially in areas like cloud infrastructure. It's one of the most common points of data leakage, and is data being put into cloud-based storage shares that shouldn't, whether it be Microsoft OneDrive, you know, Box, et cetera. So by going out and constantly analyzing all that data in real time, you know, it's not only looking for pure indicators of compromise, but indicators of risk of data existing somewhere that it shouldn't.
Yeah. It's, if you think about how many places data exists today, right? It's mind blowing. We probably forget about, right?
Think about your own data. It brings me to think about where my data exists out in the world, and for an enterprise that problem is a millionfold. I don't even know what number to put on it.
So what can somebody do? Just tangibly, tactically, you know, they're in this position. They're now, they're listening to this. They're understanding. Crap, this is definitely something I should be worried about. What do they do? Like, what are the few real first steps that they could start thinking about to prevent, you know, future pain?
Absolutely. I think, you know, I feel like I say this on every pod, but it always starts with stepping back, taking a look at what your overall business continuity, DR, and cyber resilience plan is. You know, if that has not been dusted off in the last 12 months, you're overdue. So I think that's a great place to start. One area that we often see when it comes to the kind of backup conversation and maybe switching to a modern backup and data protection provider, it's a little bit of fear of change. It's a little bit of difficulty of change, right? I've been doing it this way. It's worked. I've been able to recover my data when I need, et cetera. And I would just encourage people that although backup and data protection is, you know, as old as technology at this point, you need to take some time to invest in putting eyes on what's out there and understand how this landscape has changed and what benefits it can bring to your business. So it doesn't hurt to go have some conversations with the folks like Rubrik out there, just to understand what's changed in the backup market, and that shifting from one platform to another is, you know, usually not as hard as people think. And with the advent of things like data protection and backup as a service and DR as a service, you know, Structured and our partners can even help further kind of accelerate that time to change or that ease of change for the client to make a switch. Because, you know, changing out a solution is always a little scary, but I think that these modern tools make it very easy, and the advent of cloud and as a service offerings help simplify that even more.
So I think the takeaway is the best recovery is the one you never have to execute, right?
Yep. Protect first, but be ready. And I say that, and it sounds kind of cheeky when I say it, because there's no such thing as 100% protection. The bad actors, given enough time, effort, resource, whatever, and will find a way to get through your enterprise, however that happens. And so making sure that you've got a very solid business continuity and DR plan, that you've tested that plan, tested your recovery, and that you're confident in the immutability and air gapping of your backup data will help put you on the right path to be able to achieve those goals.
Well, again, thanks for the insights, and thank you, Rubrik, for sponsoring this discussion around cyber resiliency. I think obviously the goal of, you know, again, having the right technology, having the right partners in place, you know, be as protected as you possibly can. So thanks again, Bill. And thanks for another great episode of Structured Insights. And you can see us out on the interwebs and wherever you listen and watch your podcasts. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.